The following edition of the Kelly Alexander Show is an encore presentation.
Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
It's such a treat to welcome dancer, choreographer, and entrepreneur Jimmy Locust to the show, celebrating the 25th anniversary of Rhythm Nation. Jimmy was a principal dancer in the Rhythm Nation project and features prominently in the Miss You Much video. Jimmy reminisces about working with Janet, the power and influence of Rhythm Nation, and just how special of an artist and human being Janet really is. Up next is Canadian recording talent Virginia DeVegas discussing his rising music career and showcasing his latest single, Don't Fight the Music.
Capture your need for sound.
We continue to pay tribute to Janet Jackson and the 25th anniversary of Rhythm Nation by speaking with dancer, choreographer, and entrepreneur Jimmy Locust. Jimmy was a principal dancer in the Rhythm Nation project and features prominently in the Miss You Much video. Jimmy, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you for having me.
So I'm so excited to have you. It's been such a great treat to speak to the Rhythm Nation crew, if I can call you guys that. Before we get into Rhythm Nation stuff, though, I have to ask you about your start and how you got into the world of dance, if it was like a lifelong passion.
Well, you know, actually, I kind of fell into it by coincidence. My roommate in school, his best friend was a dancer, and he goes, come, I want to see my friend dance at school. So in a recital. So I went to the recital, and I had really never seen ballet or really had been open to any of it. And after that I was like a sophomore in high school. And after I saw that recital, it was over. I said, I'm going to be a dancer. So that's when it started for me.
Now, I'm not sure when you were a kid, where were you located? Were you already in Los Angeles? Like, how did you end up there?
No, I was honored to go to get a scholarship to a college prep boarding school in my sophomore year of high school. So that is where I went to see the recital. And from that point forward, I'm originally from Dayton, Ohio. And then the school was in West Branch, Iowa, all places, but it was awesome. And so from Iowa, I went back home, and then I got into Gus Giordano Jazz in Chicago, where actually Lavelle Smith was a part of that company too. And that's where I met Lavelle in Chicago in the early times. So then I moved out to Los Angeles.
Now, what would you consider your first big break then, Jimmy, when it comes to dance and sort of, you know, getting your name out there?
You know, I would really consider my first big break, a good friend of mine who actually went to school with me. Her name is Taja Seville. She's a recording artist, and Prince had discovered her, and she had just dropped her debut album. And she did this song called Love is Contagious. And she said, Jimmy, will you dance in my video? And I was the featured dancer, just the only dancer in that video. From there, I met Paulette Abdul, and I did her first video, Knocked Out. And from Knocked Out is when, you know, the industry started taking notice of me. And then I started getting a little bit more recognition and booking more jobs. Because I'm a diverse type, I'm a different type, I'm a smaller guy. So it just kind of worked. So when Janet was doing Rhythm Nation or the Rhythm Nation film, my agent called me and she said, Jimmy, this is an all types call. So those were the type of calls that I really loved, because that kind of was telling me that they didn't know what they were looking for. They're looking for anything. So, and I was so grateful to go into that audition, and it was a pretty grueling audition, but it was so worth it to get to work on the Janet Jackson project.
What was it like with regards to the audition? Can you explain sort of how it went down?
Okay. So first of all, Janet was and still is one of the top iconic recording artists, stars of the world to me. And so when that news came out that she was doing this new project, and no, it was really kind of hush hush, and it, you know, you just knew it was Janet. So I remember the audition was in the Valley, and it was tons of people there. And I remember I thought I was getting there early, and I was very late numbered in, like maybe number 500 or 600 or something like that. You went through the first call, and I think, you know, LaBelle Smith was there. Anthony was there running the audition. I think Barry Labor was there at some of it. And Janet. So you went through the first call. And I think there were, I'm not sure, there were more than two callbacks. I know my last callback, which was a lot fewer people, I want to say maybe 40, Janet was there. And we had to do the choreography, and then we had to freestyle. And when I knew the freestyle was coming, for some reason, I knew that's where I needed to really go in hard, because that's who she is. Janet is that type of person. She wants you, I feel, she was looking for people who are solid in who they are and what they believe, because the story that she was about to tell was intense. And you had to have a real strong self-identity to make that happen. So, and there you have it. It happened right from that point on.
Was it a big deal for you? I feel like it obviously was, but was it like a, you know, when you actually had Janet in front of you, what did it feel like to be auditioning for her?
Terrified at first, because you just couldn't believe to see Janet, and she's so, I mean, she's one of the most humblest, she's so cool, but she's so, like, big that you're just nervous, you know, so, but she was, she didn't make me feel nervous. It was me making myself nervous. But when I saw her, and I remember she had on a black Letterman jacket with pink leather sleeves, I'll never forget it. She was sitting right there, and she smiled, and it was like maybe six of us at a time, and there she was. And she was really cool, but I was really scared.
Was it, you know, because obviously the Control album had been done, you know, did that play a part in just how you you know, maybe wanted the job, knowing like how well that album had gone for her? And obviously she was definitely, you know, not riding on anybody's coattails.
Yeah, she was like, Janet is a groundbreaking, like every track up until that point and beyond was a dancer's dream. So like, if you're a dancer, if you're in class, you're dancing to Pleasure Principle or Control or Nasty Boys. This was like these were anthems in the dance community, you know, at that time, because nobody, you're right, nobody, she was making her own way and nobody was rocking her style. Nobody tried, they couldn't match it, but she was coming out hit after hit, and they were all like slamming. So yeah, I knew well of her and her music. So I knew once this project was happening, I had no idea it was going to be as enormous as it was, but I knew it was going to be slamming because of her earlier stuff that I had been loving, and the videos that she did, and you know, and the dancers, and that she really embraced the dancer. Like, she let us do pirouettes, and she let us leap, she let us dance, kick, and jeté. Like, a lot of people didn't really break that barrier yet, so I thought it was cool like that.
Joining us on the show, paying tribute to the 25th anniversary of Rhythm Nation, is dancer, choreographer, and entrepreneur Jimmy Locust. Make sure to check out his website, jimmylocust.com. Jimmy, what did it feel like when you got the call that you had made it?
Well, I was, you know, I was blown away, first of all. I just couldn't believe it. I knew my life was going to change. I really didn't know it from that point. And I have to say, you know, I got the call, but also I was with LaBelle Smith at that time, and I know he already knew because he was one of the choreographers, but I got the news with him, and, you know, he was, first of all, very cool about holding the barrier of being a choreographer because we were very close, but he was respected the system so well that it was just a joy to get the news while I was with him. But when I did get the news, I screamed and I ran around like a madman. And I just knew from that point on my life was going to change. And I knew I was going to come out a better dancer. I knew I was going to come out a better artist, or with a better identification of myself. And boy, was I right, because I didn't know it was going to be that big once we got there and found out what the project was actually about. But I was ecstatic, and I was grateful, and I was thankful to God that I got that opportunity. So it was really cool.
I actually want you to take us through those first couple of days of rehearsal and you finding out what the project, you know, was about. Because I remember watching the behind the scenes video of the Rhythm Nation project, and obviously you were interviewed for that. And I remember you being interviewed and sort of looking off into space, almost like you were seeing the moves in your head, saying like, this stuff is so intricate. So was it really like climbing a mountain at first?
Yeah, well, it was, because with this particular project, I feel like they were kind of creating it. The visual is happening with Janet as it, she knew what the picture was going to look like, but it was almost like she had etched it out. But as we were rehearsing, she was coloring it in. So as we were working, you know, you would see Janet and Renee and Lavelle and Carrie and Anthony working on like sections of really, like at that point, I had never seen anything like it. It was so agile and sharp, and it seemed hard to kind of filter through your body. But that's how the process was. It was like a big, you would come to rehearsal. Someone would be taking you through sections of choreography. Janet and some other people were in another corner working on something, and then that section would come in, and then you would be in groups, and you really didn't know your footing. The first week, you really didn't know your footing because you just didn't know how you fit in, and you didn't really get the story yet. The first week, I think, we were just getting movement vocabulary down, dancing as a unit, and feeling this new choreography that was getting ready to change the world. So it was to be a part of it. I could not understand. Now, 25 years later, I get it. But then I was just so happy that I was just there. Like, I was in the room where this creation was happening. I actually witnessed it. It was the coolest. It's probably, besides working with her brother too, that was the opening of the one of the most creative, awesome projects I've ever done. And to be more clear, I think she prepared me to be able to work with her brother later on in life, because she opened my mind. Jimmy, you could do anything. Look, I'm a smaller guy. I'm like 4'9" and a half. She didn't look at my height for this project. She looked at my talent, and not a lot of people were doing that. So I always thank her for breaking the mold of like what other people were doing. And she picked me for this project, and that gave me self-esteem to further move on to be the choreographer I am, to be the entrepreneur I am, because she looked at me and said, you can do it, and I see something in you, and this is what I want for my project. So it changed my life totally.
You know, you've been speaking so glowingly about Janet, which is amazing, and so many of her fans that are going to listen to this are just going to be overjoyed knowing that she is the person I think that we all think her to be from what we see from the outside. Can you speak about, you know, because obviously you worked with other artists. I feel like she's in her own ballpark. Like, I've always heard from people that have worked with her how gracious she is towards dancers, and she really makes you feel special. Was it almost not a letdown to work with anyone else, but was it, you know, very different considering what you'd come from?
It was very different. No one, after Janet, no one could really top it, because you're right, she took very good care of us. You know, in the industry, in that day, and I don't know as much now because I'm not much in that scene, but, you know, on a lot of jobs or a commercial or something, dancers come in, you know, you wait the 30 days to get paid, you're the last on the totem pole, you're always kind of, you're not the first. And on that project, we were the first. She took such great care of us. She created a family atmosphere, which means she let her jacket come off, and she showed us who she was so we would take off our jackets or our whatever, so we were all open. So then that's when we got the story. Then we got the story about we're like a young positive gang that's trying to change the world with positivity. But she couldn't get us to understand that until she did what a lot of artists never do, really show us who she is. And, you know, that's almost vulnerable to some standards of recording artists, but she's so confident in herself and she's so real and she's so amazing that that's who she is. That's why she's as gigantic as she is, because you get what you see with her. That is who she is, but she did show that to us. So when I did work with other people on award shows or different things, nothing really could really top it, because we were a family in the middle of, we were a family. Like for that whole process, we were a family. From the beginning, after, you know, she took us to Universal Studios. One day we came into rehearsal and we were getting ready to work. And then she was like, okay, come on. And we went to Universal Studios, like as a family. And it created this incredible bond. So when we got on film, it didn't look fake or contrived. It was real. What you saw was real. And that's why people are still talking about it 25 years later, because she was genius of how she put this project together. It was incredible. Like, I could talk all day. So I'm just letting you know. It was awesome.
That's awesome, Jimmy. And you spoke about a bond, and I think that's important, because, you know, I've seen with Janet as other projects sort of rolled through, like when the Janet album came out, it definitely seemed like she had a bond with Tina and the sort of female dancers that danced with her for like almost 10 years, I think, at that point, like Kelly Kono and Nikki Pantenberg and Seanette. Do you feel like you and Terry and Tina and Lavelle and, you know, Karen and the list goes on and on, are you like connected for life in a way?
I feel we are. I feel once what we experienced in that, from the making the audition to going through those rehearsals to the meetings or the talks we would have about it, I think it did bond us together. I think I will never forget, like, I did a video for another artist, and if I thought about it now, I couldn't remember one move from that video. But I can remember, boy, oh, I miss you. I can remember that. I can do it right now. Because it stood out in our minds. And the way she and the choreographers chose to teach it, it was ingrained. So we could all, we just happened to hang out, and I bet you we could all do Miss You March, because of the chorus, at least, because it's ingrained in a Rhythm Nation. One and two, like, yes, I think we are bonded together. You know, I think it is a bonding, and I'm thankful to Janet for that.
If you could have the chance to suit up again, I've asked this of Terry and Anthony and Tina and Lavelle, if you could suit up again and do it one more time, would you do it?
Definitely. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I would do it in a heartbeat, because it's, I don't know what she spawned from that. Like, if you look at the works of the people you just named, Terry, Lavelle, Tina, those people have gone on to do magnificent works as choreographers and creative directors and visualization in the world of dance. So I think, yeah, if I had an opportunity to do that again, it would be a joy, because it was something that changed my life. And, you know, one more note on Janet and just on her humbleness. A couple of years after that, I think it was in 95, Lavelle Smith actually booked me to work with Michael Jackson, because he was choreographing for him. And I really was appreciative that I was in Atlanta at that time, and he called me. And, you know, that's kind of that other bond thing that kind of happened. But I was very grateful for that. So we're doing the MTV Awards with Michael, and we started in the audience. But Janet, I saw Janet when we were getting ready to go on stage, and I was like, hey, Janet, and I waved at her. Now, most people would just wave back at you, and then, you know, because you're on the award show. Janet got up out of her seat, came over, and hugged me. And I'm like, did everybody see that Jenna hug me? Like, it was awesome. But it just says how beautiful of a person she is to get up in an award show where she generated sweet awards, I'm sure, and she came over and gave me a hug before I went on stage and danced with her brother. That just shows how beautifully humble and wonderful this woman is. And that truly made, I still think about that, and it makes me feel special to this day. So I wanted to share that because you're going to be sharing it with Janet fans to let them further know she is a beautiful person inside and out.
Was that the last time you actually saw Janet and spoke to her in person, Jimmy, or have you seen her recently?
I haven't seen her recently. I think that time was probably because soon after that, I had moved to Atlanta. So that's when I was working on, I was doing the Olympics, you know, I was doing some other things in that area. So I wasn't very much in the LA circuit. And then I went to Europe a little bit. So I did kind of step out, but you know, I think right after that is when Shawnette had kind of stepped in, which is a dear friend of mine, and we still stay in touch, and we're actually going to kind of get together and try to work with some stuff because she's doing some awesome work right now. But yeah, I haven't really seen her, but I follow her because I, you know, follow her as her work, and I wait, you know, for her next album to come out. And now that I own my own performing arts center, we rock Janet. All the time, because her beats are still current now. People are copying her beats, you know, and making platinum hits, but she started it. So, you know, Locust Performing Arts Center, we rock Janet all the time.
If you could actually speak to Janet, you know, with regards to the 25th anniversary, what would you say to her, Jimmy?
You know, I mean, for me, because I left with such a positive realm. Probably the first thing I would say is, hey, Jen, how you doing? Nice to see you. Like, it would be more like of a friendly occurrence because her life is busy. She's got things going on. And if that's something that she's really feeling, that's cool. But if I had a chance to have a moment with her, it would be like, what's up? What you doing? How are you? What's going on? Like, it would be more of that than anything epic that I would try to think of to say to her, because she didn't leave me thinking that way about her. She left me feeling like we were kind of friends. So I would approach her and say, first of all, how are you doing? I hope you're doing well. You look great. You know, that's what I would say to her. But if something came up of us getting together and if she was down for it, I would be there in a heartbeat.
I actually had a little joke with Terry Bixler when I was speaking to him, and I said that it would be great if, you know, you guys could have like a 25th anniversary Rhythm Nation party, and he told me to make it happen. So I'm putting it out into the universe to whoever's listening. I think it would be amazing if all of you guys could actually get together and reminisce, and obviously the fans would love that beyond words. Can you take us back to the Miss You Much video and how amazing like you danced in that? Is Miss You Much your favorite, Jimmy, or is there another song that really speaks to you what to dance to?
Well, I love The Knowledge because The Knowledge speaks to our youth. So, and I think that choreography and them, like that visual there was incredible. I love that. I love Rhythm Nation because just the process, that how we did it, because it was a night shoot. So we would report to work at 6:30 at night and work till 6 in the morning. So, and they had these humongous major speakers where you could just get swallowed up by the sound. I love that. And I love them. I really got that movement quick because after, you know, we would rehearse and we would go home and I would just rehearse, go over choreography all night until I went to bed. And now I go to rehearsal the next day. That's how excited I was. So I think my first would be The Knowledge that I love for the piece of music and what it says and about our youth. I love dancing the beat of Rhythm Nation. The breakdown of Rhythm Nation is dope. I love it. And then Miss You Much just changed the face of pop track. But I loved it because she, you know, picked me for that opening section. Like, that is an awesome honor. Like, that was the hugest honor. People, that kind of got me out there because she actually said, "You're so silly, Jimmy." I'm like, "Janet said my name over a video that's still there today." So I have proof that I know Janet. So it's kind of cool. Like, I'm still a fan. Like, I work with her and I love her as an artist, but I'm still a fan of hers. And that's the cool thing about it is when I was working with her, you know, she would let me sit and watch dailies with her, like with her mom or something. Like, she was so cool. Like, she's awesome.
You mentioned, obviously, that you're still a fan of hers, and I asked this of Tina, and I want to ask this of you, because you sound so passionate about her. Obviously, she's been sort of off the scene for the last couple of years, taking a bit of a break, and I know, you know, if I can speak for the fans right now, we want her to come back beyond words. Do you think that the industry needs her to come back? Because I feel like there's something missing.
Yes, no, they need, first of all, they need a real, well, I want to be careful how I say this. They need a real positive female role model artist on the scene, because it's not happening right now. So firstly, I think that we need her for that, because I think it's kind of changing. And I mean, she deals with her vibe, but she also is a message giver. So I do feel that we do need her to come back, and, you know, but in her time when she's ready, because Janet is major. She's, you know, she's always thinking about her next moves, or she's thinking about how she's doing, keeping herself prepped for whatever she's going to do next. And whatever that time is, it's going to be the perfect time. So you never rush a master artist when they're creating a masterpiece. So, I mean, I think as fans, we'll just wait and hang out, because whenever it comes, the timing's going to be perfect, because that's how she rolls.
Obviously, you know, you are very aware of the pop scene. I get that just by speaking to you and sort of what's going on in the industry. And obviously, you know, you have your own performing arts center. If you were sort of thinking, if Rhythm Nation was released in 2014, you know, 25 years later, what's your take? Would it be as successful today as it was in 1989?
Yeah, I think it would be even more successful, because I think our youth right now are in desperate trouble. And what she was speaking about and the imagery that she used still makes sense today. That little package that, you know, the guy's holding in the rain, what he's doing. That's the, you know, so the message is very, very now. So if it was released now, I think it would change a lot of the views of some of our youth, because let's face it, a lot of our youth are lost. And because of technology right now, a lot of those kids are alone. They're being terribly bullied. They've seen images that they really shouldn't be seeing. So they have no guidance. But I feel like if she had to put that out now, I think they would think twice before they did those things, or they would think twice before they hurt someone's feelings. You know, at my school, I have this group called Harmony Nation, which is an anti-bullying group that I take a show throughout the school system. But that's what Janet kind of started in me. She let me know that when I worked with her way back then, I didn't know how I was going to do it. But when I opened my school, I'm like, that's it. I'm going to do something, because I followed my dream and I, you know, made it to an extent. You know, now I can get the attention of these kids. You know, if they see me on stage with, you know, in a video with Janet or Michael or whatever, then I can get them to stop and be like, wow, oh, okay. Then I can talk to them because I have their attention. That's what Janet did back then, and it changed everything back in 89. Like, you had people really wanting to be better people. So I think it would work just as good, if not more, now, because we need some kind of message like that, because it's kind of messed up right now for some of the youth out there. So I think she speaks to the youth a lot, and I think it could really work.
Something I haven't been able to ask, you know, Tina or Lavelle or Anthony or Terry is, how things felt when it all ended, when the project ended. Because you mentioned, you know, that it was such a family type vibe. Did you actually go through like a sadness and a withdrawal period, Jimmy?
It's so funny that you're saying that. Yes, I did. And I was sad a little bit, and you would just reminisce because you miss getting up and going to rehearsal, you know, or you miss getting up and going to, you know, the set. And I think kind of what happened after it, for some people, it kind of continued because some people actually did do the tour right after it, like Lavelle, I know Tina and Karen, and some, you know, Anthony, some of them, I think they did do the tour. I was doing another film or something, but Renee at one point, they were in LA somewhere, and I said, I think it was Irvine Meadows, I'm not sure, but while they were on tour, they kind of introduced the dancers and Renee goes, go out there. So I kind of surprised her on stage and did like a little breakdown with her just at one of the tours while they were doing it. And it was so great. But I know everybody, some of the fam, it kind of kept going because the tour started. But for me, I did feel kind of like it was all positive. I didn't feel bad. I just felt like, wow, that was great. And you just reminisced on like, did I just do that? Was I just on that film? Did I just do that? So yeah, it was kind of a little bit of withdrawal, but when you have, they're the same for dancers, film is forever. Now that I have it on film, I would just look at the film and say, wow, that was so cool. So it was a little bit of a letdown, but I was happy for the people that went on tour, and I was happy for Janet that it was so successful for her. And the people that, you know, the friends that I made on that job, I still know to this day, you know, so it's very, very awesome.
Do you think, Jimmy, then, like, I know this is probably hard because you were part of that project. Is Rhythm Nation her most prolific album?
Ooh, well, in my mind, for message, yes. But she, right after that, when she came out with If, and after that album took, so she does different specific messages. That message that she did on Rhythm Nation was serious, focused, and urgent. So she did that message, it resounded all over the world. And then she did another message, which was like more punchful and like sexy and dancy and hot and great tracks. So I feel like it was, but I think every one of her albums have their own body of work and message to it. But that one really targeted people of youth that she wanted to get a message out to them to say, you need to look at your life, use the knowledge. You know, you don't find the knowledge in the pipe is one of her lyrics. Now that's 25 years ago, I still remember that. So she's talking in that rap about you don't need to be doing drugs, but get the knowledge so you can become a, you know, a recording artist of your own or a poet or whatever. Like that's what that message taught me, is that I could leave and I could do whatever I wanted to do. And that started my vision. And now I'm living it. I have a performing arts center. I'm living my dream. I still work as a choreographer. But, you know, I have my own my little reality show that I'm doing, you know, about positivity. So she embedded that in me to say, you know, she was talking to me in that video. And I did what she said. I really found the knowledge, and I feel like it was a message well spent. And I'm only just one story. If you got everybody that was moved by that album in 89, you'd be talking to CEOs of major companies because she instilled in us that we can do it. And some of us took it and we did it. And I think that's why she's incredible.
Jimmy, how magical is Janet Jackson? Because I'll quantify that by saying, like, as a fan, like, I've, you know, followed her since I was a kid, and I've always felt like she just emanates light and she inspires people. And, you know, there's other people that do that. Like, I know, you know, if you speak to Madonna fans, they will probably say the same thing. But I've always felt that there's a sparkle, there's a light that emits from Janet that is different than any other of her, you know, compatriots, if you will. And obviously mm-hmm. you were part of that inner sanctum back in 89. Is she like a phenomenon?
Yes, she is. She is a phenomenon. And I think because she's the total package and she has this incredible sense of humbleness that you usually don't find in really top megastars, that's what makes her light shine even brighter. So you're right. She shines brighter. And I think it's her humbleness and it's her grace. And it's her, I want to say, knowledge, because she is a smart businesswoman and she's smart. So, I mean, I think I think she's awesome.
Now, Jimmy, where can people find you? I know we spoke sort of about your Performing Arts Center, but, you know, if people want to contact you or find out what you're doing, like how can they do that?
Well, I'm at JimmyLocust1 on Twitter. And I, as you said earlier, I have my own website where they can contact me at JimmyLocust.com. My Performing Arts Center in Stamford, Connecticut is www.locustperformingarts.com, where we have a studio of over 470 children, 3 working studios. We are based on doing a lot of community service for World AIDS Day and lymphoma, you know, liver walks. So I want the kids to understand kind of what Janet instilled in me, that use your talent to uplift someone else. So that's what I'm spreading at my school, that I want them to go out and do community service. It's not only going to help on their college applications, but also it's helping someone else and not just yourself. So that's where you can find me. And I'm on Facebook under Jimmy Locust.
Awesome. Jimmy, I so appreciate your time today. It's been such an awesome experience to speak with you about all of this, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed my time, Kelly, and you have a great day.
Awesome. That is dancer, choreographer, and entrepreneur Jimmy Locust. Again, check out his website, jimmylocust.com.
the Kelly Alexander Show.
Happy to welcome to the show an incredible young artist who's been on quite the ride the last year as more and more people across Canada and other parts of the world are taking notice of his music. Derek Baker is Virginia to Vegas and has had noticeable success with his collaboration with Alyssa Reed on We Are Stars and is now promoting his latest single, Don't Fight the Music. Derek, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for having me. That's such a nice intro.
I love writing the intros, Derek. I'm not going to lie.
And
Awesome. And I've been fortunate to actually interview you for the radio station I work for. And now we're so happy to have you on the show here. We have a lot of people that are actually listening from overseas right now. And I want them to get a taste of your music. So we're going to play the new single at the end of the interview. But can you explain to people why Virginia to Vegas? I know I've asked you that before, but for people who don't know, explain the name.
Yeah, I mean, Virginia to Vegas started off as an acoustic duo, and it was kind of like, it was a guy that was going by the name of Vegas, and I was born in Richmond, Virginia, and it was kind of the juxtaposition between our music. And, you know, as the project progressed, he decided that he didn't want to be a part of it anymore, and I kind of just took it on as my moniker. But it's kind of just turned into, you know, more of a project, so I'm not tied to anything. You know, me, Derek Baker, as a songwriter, is Derek Baker, but Virginia to Vegas is this project that I've been working on for the last couple of years.
How did your music career take off?
It's funny because I started as a YouTube project, and it started to gain some notoriety. And I remember like one of the first like websites to like blog about it was actually Virgin Radio, and they blogged about it here in Toronto. And you know, it just started to pick up, and people started to take notice, and they really liked the spins that I did on my covers. And then I signed a record deal with Wax Records, which is an independent label off Universal. And, we started writing songs and We Are Stars came around and people just, you know, really, really took to it. And it was, you know, from there it was, you know, the rest is history. As I say, it's been a crazy 6 months or I guess close to a year now.
How would you actually describe your sound, Derek? I know we talked about this being like a project that you're not tied to it in the grand scheme, you know, for years and years if you choose to go in another direction. But right now, how would you describe your sound? Because I know from the first singles, We Are Stars and now Don't Fight the Music, I feel like there's an undertone, but it seems like you're trying new things.
Yeah, I mean, well, I listen to a lot of different kinds of music, right? And I grew up listening to a lot of different kinds of music. But ultimately, I love pop songs. You know, I remember my dad showing me the Beatles when I was a kid and just loving and appreciating what a good pop song was. And, you know, looking up to artists like John Mayer, who are really, you know, great songwriters. So, I look at those kind of aspects of music. And then, you know, for me, like what I like to listen to when I'm in the car or at my house or throwing on a record, you know, I listen to stuff that's a little bit more alternative, like M83 or the 1975. So I think, you know, there's these different kinds of things that I pull from, but I think ultimately what Virginia Vegas is to me is it's they're pop songs, but I try to put, you know, the kind of music that I listen to, I try to put those influences in with the way the songs are, you know, presented and you know, the style of music that they are.
Joining us on the show is Derek Baker, better known as Virginia to Vegas. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at Virginia to Vegas. And of course, you can learn more about him on his website, virginiatovegas.com. You've been touring. What is your favorite part of being on the road? And I feel like you're a bit of a gypsy, but I wanted to ask you sort of part two of that question. Do you get lonely and or homesick when you're gone for a long time?
You know, I never used to get homesick. And before I was doing music, I was working in the travel industry. And I was used to being away, and just, you know, on this last leg of the tour, I actually did start to get homesick. And I think that's part of, I don't know, getting older, but I did start feeling like, you know what, I kind of miss home. I kind of miss, you know, just being in my own space. But I love being on the road, and the guys that I travel with, the guys that are in my band are amazing. And, you know, traveling with Alyssa, she's a good friend of mine. So being on the road and traveling is really cool. And, you know, for me, the best part about being on the road is when I do the meet and greets after the shows and I get to meet, you know, all the people that are listening to my music and that have been supporting me. I think that's so cool because, you know, obviously it sounds so cliche, but without those people, I wouldn't be able to be traveling the country. I wouldn't be able to be releasing music or, you know, living out my dreams. So when I get to sit and talk to those people that come and meet me after the shows, it's, you know, it's really special because, you know, to them it's special, but I don't know if they know how special it is to me. So those moments are really, really, really cool for me.
You mentioned Alyssa, and again, for people who might not know, Alyssa Reed is an amazing Canadian artist who just keeps getting bigger and bigger here as, you know, she keeps releasing music. Talk to us about how you two came together, your friendship, and how even We Are Stars came together, because that seemed like a song that just sort of, you know, just went from 0 to 60.
Yeah, well, Alyssa and I are signed on the same label, so, I mean, that's obviously how we met, but our friendship started, I got in a car accident, and Alyssa was, like, the only person that came to my rescue. And she, like, sweet-talked the cop, and, like, I don't know, she was awesome. So she came to my rescue, and ever since then, we've been really good friends. And we were in the studio one summer day, and, you know, we started writing the idea, We Are Stars. I had this idea because I was battling between trying to manage having a job and, you know, working in the arts. And it's, you know, when you're starting off, you know, you really are starting artists, and it's difficult. And to me, that's kind of what We Are Stars was about and what it meant. It was about striving for your dreams. And I think, you know, when we both, obviously we both know what that's like. And so for us to write that song, it came together in like 30 minutes.
Talk to us about your latest single, Don't Fight the Music. Again, it's been added, I know, obviously, at Virgin where I work, and I'm assuming at other stations across the country. Did that song come together quickly, and what do you want people to take away from that track?
You know, the funny thing about that song is it didn't come together quickly. It was a song that I was, you know, in the bank for a year, maybe. It was something that, you know, we had done, and I didn't really love it, and one of the writers that was co-writing on that album with me said, you know, I think you should take a second look at this song. And it was something so simple as just a lyric swap. And once I kind of let go of my, you know, my stranglehold of control on the song and where I wanted it to go and what I envisioned for it, and just kind of opened up to the, you know, to the song and let it take me where I wanted it to go or where it wanted to go. You know, we changed a couple lyrics, and then it was funny because once I let go of that control, the song kind of became about letting go of control in a relationship. And then it just kind of made sense. So it was funny how that, you know, how that kind of happened. And then once, you know, we laid down a demo and I took it home and I fell in love with it. And then it just, you know, it became an obvious choice for me that it was the next song I was going to release.
Are we expecting an album from you?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's coming out very soon. November 11th. It's my first EP called Volume 1, and it's a collection of 6 songs.
And what do you, is there like an underlying tone to it, or is it like really a collection of songs that you've just put together?
Well, you know, I probably wrote like 30 or 40 songs trying to narrow them down. And for me, I think on this EP, it kind of covers all the bases, and they're all songs, like even We Are Stars. It's about those little moments, you know, that like We Are Stars is that little moment of inspiration. And, you know, I wrote a song called Colorful, which is about that moment when you realize that, you know, everything you were doing before you met that person that you fall in love with was black and white. And Don't Fight the Music is that kind of moment, that, you know, that sexy moment where you just kind of like let go of things and let love take you where it will. And, you know, as cliche or cheesy as it might sound, the album are just collections of, you know, love songs and real moments that I've kind of gone through over the last 2 years of my life.
Do you have plans to travel to the U.S.? You know, you mentioned that you were born there. Obviously, you're here in Canada, your hometown in a way. Do you want to head down there and do more things and see where it takes you, Derek?
I mean, I would love to go to the States and you know, play some shows and you know, work with a label down there. You know, I've had a bunch of labels come up here and you know, talk to me and show interest and stuff like that. But for me, you know, Toronto's my home. I love Toronto. I love Canada. I love being here. And I mean, I don't really see that changing in the foreseeable future. I think Toronto's kind of where I like to live, and it's where I like to, what's the saying, lay my roots.
Gotcha. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that. You know, I've been fortunate on the show to talk to a lot of Canadian artists, also obviously some artists from, you know, across the pond in Britain and even some American artists, of course. But when it comes to Toronto, you know, I think a lot of people, the sense of Toronto is that it, you know, it's the center of the universe in Canada, you know, and so on and so and so forth. Do you find that there's a particular vibe that you pull from Toronto? Because, like, I lived in Toronto for 8 years. I have a great affinity for it. You know, my hometown is Montreal, yeah. So I was happy to come back here. But I will always love Toronto. But I find Toronto often gets a bad rap. What do you take away from Toronto in your sound?
You know, Toronto's electric. And that's the best way I can put it. When I was a kid, and I grew up in a small town just outside of Toronto, I remember like taking the Greyhound down here with my acoustic guitar and like going on an open mic. And I remember getting off the bus and like looking up at the city and looking at the people and feeling the electricity and feeling the energy in the city and going, man, one day I want to be doing things here. And I remember how powerful, you know, it was like a magnet, how powerful the city was, and it drew me here. And now, you know, being a resident of Toronto for the last couple of years, you know, I learned to love it more and more. You know, Toronto's more than the tourist aspect of Toronto when you're, you know, down by the lake. There's so many amazing neighborhoods in Toronto and really cool people and great food and great venues. And there's so much great stuff to do in Toronto that, you know, if you're just visiting, you might not get the full taste of. It's Toronto's a cool city. And, you know, for me, I love it. But that's not to say that there's not charms all over Canada, because over the last year, I've got to see a lot of amazing cities that I haven't had the opportunity to see. And, you know, I'm more so falling in love with this country more than I ever have.
That's amazing. And that's so great for, I think, people to listen to, just how awesome our country is. And, you know, we talked a bit before about your collaboration with Alyssa Reed. Who is your artistic crush, if I can put it like that? And would you want to collaborate them? Like, is it like the Rihannas of the world or someone else?
Like crushes in like physically attracted, or crushes in like
artistically?
I'd love to work with them.
Yeah, like artistically, like you're loving, you're digging what they're doing.
I would love to, like, right now, if I could work with anyone, it would probably be the 1975.
Okay.
But if you would ask like my 12-year-old self who I'd want to work with, it would probably be down there.
Very good. I love it. Derek, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We really, really appreciate it. And of course, we wish you all the best with the new album, and you come back on the show anytime you want.
Thank you so much for having me, Kelly.
That's Derek Baker, again, better known as Virginia to Vegas. Make sure to follow him on his website, virginiatovegas.com.
Hey, this is Virginia to Vegas, and you're hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
I know it's hard, we fell apart like passing stars, but you still got my heart, had me from the start. Said we won't last, they don't know us. Sometimes love can go by so fast, and we don't look back. Maybe tonight's the night I will let you see, show you all of me. Maybe tonight's the night you show me everything. I just want. In your eyes, just hold me tight. Never let this go. Take it nice and slow. The moment's ours, colliding stars like fireworks when you're next to me. Girl, you set me free. Maybe tonight's the night I will let you see, show you all of me. Maybe tonight's the night. Show me everything. I just want you.
Kelly Alexander Show.
We really appreciate you spending time with us on the show this week, and a big thank you going out to my guests, Jimmy Locust and Virginia DeVegas. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from actor Gregory Peck. Faith gives you an inner strength and a sense of balance and perspective in life. We'd love for you to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter at K Alexander Show, on Facebook Kelly Alexander Show, and of course our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. If you have any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an amazing week. You and I'll chat soon.